Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, I don't know where you are at the moment. I'm trying to judge by your background. You're in your studio. You've left Simon Jordan behind. When were you going to tell me about that, Kieran? I had to find out via Twitter.
I thought you'd be in the disappointed, not necessarily angry, but I suspect you're both in terms of. I was asked to pop up to the baby shard and go in with Jim White and Simon Jordan to talk about this and that.
Yes, well, we know producer Guy is a master of the I'm not angry, so much as disappointed. Whereas I, Kieran, I'm a master of the what the fuck, really? I had to find out via Twitter. Kieran, I think we should start this pod by thanking everybody for all the good wishes we've had from people for our 500th anniversary pod, for which we interviewed that their Swiss Ramble, which was meant to be a surprise, Kieran. But
I thought we'd sort of teased it a bit.
Well, there's teasing, and then there's going, we're interviewing Swiss Ramble tomorrow, which is on the other end of teasing spectrum.
I'm not good at subtlety.
But it was lovely.
A strong point.
All your best wishes were very welcome, very touching. I'm still slightly annoyed that Swiss is not a UK subs fan, but not as annoyed as producer Guy is when Swiss indicated at the end that we were less than professional when we started. I think off air he used the words, oh, bless. Well, I don't know much about what happened off air, except I left you two having a cure off. I just went out to the kitchen. I saw it was still happening. I went back in again. But no, it's still the cure. You're still trying to outdo each other on obscure cure facts. But he was wonderful. And if you're listening, Swiss.
Brilliant.
It's not, you don't often get to use that phrase, do you? If you're listening, Swiss. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
We both had a nice day out, didn't we, at the football the weekend, Kieran? Pleasant. So you did something I didn't manage to do and get into Bournemouth, which, congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the only consolation is that, and I know you disapprove of this as well, is that in recent weeks I've been slapping on 20 quid a match on Brighton nil. and to lose, and I've got to be honest, it's like taking candy from a baby.
Yeah, do you know what, Kieran? I don't think we were discussing this the other day. It may surprise people to understand. And occasionally, we chat on a non-price of football day, but we were discussing yesterday. I don't think there's a nicer walk in world football than there is crossing Putney Bridge and walking through Bishop Park. It's just a wonderful. If you get your timing right, it's less of a nice, relaxing walk if you suddenly look round the Wetherspoons and go, we've done it again. Everyone else has gone. And you find yourself scurrying through Bishop Park. But I remember going to Union Berlin, and that was a nice walk through the forest. But if any other listeners out there, Kieran, can suggest a nicer walk than the one to Fulham, I'd love to hear it. It's Newsday, Kieran. It's big news. We're recording this on Tuesday, for logistical reasons, Kieran. And it's important that our listeners know that before we discuss the first story, because this morning when the list of stories came through, Everton and 777 was ironically number seven. It was a small story about 777 possibly loaning about £15 million to Everton. I think we were going to discuss that. But events of the day have slightly overtaken it. It's possible that there'll be more events on Wednesday. And if we miss those, Kieran, we will, of course, catch up with them as soon as we can on Monday. But Everton did a surprising recruitment number today, didn't they?
Yes. I think this story was initially broken by David Hellier at Bloomberg, and it was followed up by The Guardian as well. Everton are reportedly, I guess, you know, my knowledge of journalists is that they always double check from independent sources, because it's their reputation and it's their institutions that they work for whose reputations on the line, is that they've called in some restructuring and insolvency advisors. Now, earlier in the day, we had heard stories about our favourite Australian airline, Bonza, having to suspend all flights because something hadn't been paid. So that didn't look good because, you know, ideally you would expect 777 to be providing the funding there. So that wasn't a good start to the day. Does this mean administration? No, it doesn't. You know, the whole point about calling in restructuring advisors is that they are going in to try to avoid administration. And I know from personal experience, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you look at the state of the finances. I've been talking to a series of journalists over the course of the day, and certainly the noises which are coming from Merseyside is, look, the wages were paid this month. We're up to date with payments to HMRC. We're up to date with payments to Lang O'Rourke, who are the contractors for the stadium. Yes, 777 are providing working capital to fund all of that, and that's why these extra amounts of £15 to £20 million a month are coming in. But we don't think things are as bad or as being painted. And if that was the case, I'd say, okay, fine. But why are you asking for a firm of, you know, restructuring advisors to come in? What do the restructuring people do is that they focus on cash. They look at the cash you're expected to receive. Everton will be getting a payment in June, which tends to be quite big in terms of next year's TV money. Do they have any outstanding bills before then? Looking at the payroll costs, because there's no more matches in effect, and doing some sums, and they will be advising the board accordingly, because what you don't want to be doing is to be entering a period of what we refer to as wrongful or fraudulent trading, and this is where a company or a board of directors knowingly enters into contracts in the knowledge that they can't afford to pay them. So it will be given sort of its financial advice, its quasi-legal advice as well. So everybody's protecting their own interests. What happens if there's a worst-case scenario? Well, it tends to be the case, and we saw this in the case of Derby County, that Quantamar went in, did an investigation, and then were appointed as the administrators. So that would be the process if the worst, and that is worst-case scenario, and I really must stress this. A lot of people, I think, are jumping the gun. If Everton have managed to pay those, you know, major payments in terms of instalments on the stadium due this month and payroll, then that is a positive. Do they have the money to do that for the end of May? That's a separate issue. It's a separate discussion. Could we be having 777 as the owners by the end of May? It could be that the Premier League will have signed them off. And we've heard nothing from the Premier League with regards to the potential approval of 777 as owner. So there's a lot taking place. I went into the Premier League handbook, and it says, in the event of insolvency, you get a 9-point deduction. Now, you and I are both old enough to remember a couple of clubs in the Championship who would work out when they were mathematically safe. And they knew that they got, I think it was a 12-point deduction in the Championship. And if we're 12 points above, then they would then go into administration, do a pre-pack, write off all the debts, and things started to get a little bit manipulative. I don't think that would be the case here at Everton. Could the Premier League say, if you are safe, we're going to delay the points deduction to next season? The simple answer is, without going through the small print of the small print, you can't give an analysis.
Yeah, because already the conspiracy theories, and I think Luton are playing Everton on the next game. There's conspiracy theories. If Everton win that, they'll go straight into administration. But as you say, there's no indication that that is even on the agenda at the moment. First of all, Kieran, do we know, or do you know, who the company is that Everton have called in?
Yeah, it begins with a T, something like Tenio, or yeah, there are financial advisors, stroke turnaround specialists that operate. These are as good or as bad as any of them. Yeah, they've got a job to do, and yeah, let's be perfect. Having done that job myself early on in my professional career, it needs a certain type of person to be good at it. I wasn't that type of person. I wasn't good enough for it, I'll be honest. I'm too soft. But they will be professional, and you hope that they, whatever they do, they give appropriate advice. It doesn't matter who you support. You want Everton to be in existence. You want people's jobs to be preserved. You want local suppliers to be paid, and all of the things that we hope for all 92 clubs and those in other leagues as well.
To come back to your point about the Premier League, Kieran, the collapse of Bonza Airlines yesterday obviously has ramifications for Australian football as well, because they sponsor Melbourne Victory. But Bonza Airlines are a major airline, major cross Australia airline, wholly owned, I believe, by 777, or certainly 777 are major partners. According to the Guardian report today, the PR company that have been working for 777 for quite some time have terminated their agreement because they've yet to be paid. So we know at least one of those things is true about Bonza Airlines going bust. It almost beggars belief that from this situation, the Premier League could now nod through 777 taking over Everton Football Club, doesn't it, in these circumstances?
It does. I think there is a problem in that Farhad Moshiri has given 777 exclusivity. We've had discussion, you and I, with third parties who know other parties who say, we find Everton a really attractive proposition, but we can't, nobody's answering our calls because they've got this exclusivity. So are the Premier League in an awkward position in the sense that could they be on the receiving end of a lawsuit if they forbid the acquisition of Everton Football Club by 777? Because we're living in a very litigious world. 777 are from the US. If you take a look at the nature of some of the activities of 777 and how it generates money, that is on sort of legal cases and structured settlements and so on. So I do have an element of sympathy for the Premier League. If they approve the deal and it all goes wrong, it reflects badly on them. If they prevaricate, which is what they're doing at present, everybody gets frustrated. And I don't think the prevarication is at the behest of the Premier League. It's due to the failure of 777 to provide appropriate documentation, which stands up to appropriate scrutiny.
Well, as we know, Kieran, I'm no expert, but if they can't afford to pay their PR company, it just makes you wonder how they're going to afford to run Everton Football Club. I mean, and also, of course, the conspiracy theories. If this had been the pod we were going to record and the original Everton story was number 7 and I was asking you, what's the £15 million for? Of course, on social media and elsewhere, people are already speculating what the £15 million was for. Well, that's obviously to pay the wages. It's obviously to pay the bills. But as you've just told us, the wages are paid, the bills are paid, everything's up to date. So why were 7-7 putting extra money into Everton?
Well, it could have been they were putting in because the wages wouldn't have been paid unless they'd agreed to do that. I'd heard, again, you have to take everything with a huge dose of salt. I'd heard from another source that they were struggling to pay the wages and then 777 stumped up some money. Now, I don't know how much. And also, you have to treat everything that you hear with a degree of healthy scepticism, unless you hear it, as the journalists will always say to us, we're not journalists. I'm a teacher. You're a writer and a comedian. We have to treat it as professionally as we can and give due caution.
And last year, well, do you have a worry? I mean, I think Ron Martin talks more about what's going on at his club than 777 do. But no response to 777 about this whatsoever. You'd have expected something by now, even if it was some kind of holding. Well, it might be because their PR company have walked out and they don't know how to do a press release. Who knows? But their silence is rather worrying, isn't it?
Yes, it's a classic example of how not to conduct yourself professionally. We've had nothing from Farhad Moshiri. He's effectively gone absent without leave for a long period of time. You know, it's been left to Sean Dyche to rally the troops and to you know, get Evertonians proud of their football club once again, which has taken a bit of the pressure, a bit of the attention away from the takeover. Yeah. And you know, the club has benefited from that, but they've not run this well. You know, Josh Wander came out with a few smart-ass one-liners, I think at one point in time over the course of the last few months, saying, oh yeah, I love it when people throw lawsuits at me. I've had a couple of lawsuits thrown at me, Kevin. I'll be honest, I was absolutely terrified. you know, I'm going, I don't find this to be fun at all. But you know, some people, we know Ron Martin's another one, seem to get off on it. Yeah.
In most weeks, Kieran, this next story would have been far and away the headline news. It involves you spending a lot of time in the media today using the word anchoring, a similar word to the one I used when I found out you'd been talking to Simon Jordan, in fact, on TalkSport. But it looks like there's going to be major changes to the, well, FFS is on the way out by the look of it, isn't it? So,
FFS? I think that stands for something else.
I'm not sure what it stands for, Kieran, or why I said it. Do you know what it is? Because I know sometimes you tell me off, because it's profit and sustainability rules. So I was about to say financial fair play and then thought, no, I don't want to be told off by Kieran. And then went for FFS, which again is something else I said when I discovered on Twitter that you'd been spending the morning with Simon Jordan, Kieran.
Yes, so we've got this new set of rules which are going to run alongside the expected change of rules, which is coming in season 25-26. They're using this phrase anchoring. I think if it had been 10 or 15 years ago, we would have used the phrase pegging, but I believe that now has amongst the kids has a new meaning. Because I the first card game I learnt to play was cribbage, and I learnt that down the Two Eagles with Uncle Terry, who used to take me down for a lemonade, and he taught me, because I think cribbage is the only game of cards that you can play in an English pub, or because it's deemed to be a pure game of skill,
possibly, or an English prison, yeah, either way,
or an English prison, that's right. that's part of the reason why I became reasonably proficient with mental arithmetic, because I could work my way up and down a cribbage board. But I understand it's got a more modern meeting, and if Uncle Terry had returned from the Two Eagles saying you wouldn't believe the pegging skills of the barmaid at the Two Eagles, I think today we'd all be shocked and slightly disapproving.
Oh, well, I think the trouble is, Kieran, that given the way things are at the present moment, it would be inappropriate for me to ask a young person what they mean by pegging as well. So we're going to have to, that question is going to have to be left unanswered. But perhaps in the meantime, we could get back to the serious issue of the spending cap, Kieran.
Yes. So the proposal is that we're going to take the TV money of the club finishing bottom in the Premier League. And that was £103 million in season 22-23. And we're going to multiply that by a number, and that number could be 4.5, or it could be 5, or it could be 6. So if we take 5, 103 times 5 is 515. And we can say, well, that is the cap in terms of what every club can potentially pay through a combination of wages and amortization, impairment, and agents' fees, and so on. And that, if it was introduced by itself, would go down extremely well in Newcastle and extremely well in Birmingham. And I would expect it would go down extremely well in Nottingham and parts of Liverpool as well, for Everton fans, if it had been backdated. Because it does create a level playing field. It means that every club, if they've got owners who are willing to provide that level of funding, now can spend the same amount of money. And this is what we refer to as a hard cap. And this is what we have if you take a look at US franchise sports. So if you take a look at the NBA and the NFL and so on. And the argument in favour of having a hard cap is because every club can spend the same amount of money on its overall football activities, it creates greater competitiveness. And we've said before that the reason why there's so much criticism of the present level of rules or the present type of rules is that it effectively reinforces the strength of the elite against the non-elite. And it creates a closed shop, and it means that there is less jeopardy. You know, we go back to the 70s, Derby County, Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, Everton. We saw all of these different clubs. You see Ipswich as runners-up in the old First Division. And there was genuine excitement from season to season to season. And that doesn't exist anymore. It's all the usual suspects. That's intriguing in its own right. But these rules are operating alongside the rules which say, let's take your revenue and then you can only spend 70% of that on player costs. I put all of those numbers into a spreadsheet yesterday morning, and I think the only clubs that potentially would have to spend a wee bit less were Chelsea, who had a bad season last season and sacked two managers, so they got huge redundancy payments, and Manchester City, who, if the cup was up for grabs, they won it. You know, they had a fantastic... So therefore, they paid huge bonuses for doing the treble and so on. That's not going to be repeated this season. So why were these rules introduced? I understand that it was Steve Parish at Palace who was in favour of the idea, but it's now been picked up very much and is run by Arsenal. And why Arsenal? It's because Arsenal have substantially lower commercial revenues than both the Manchester clubs. The only Manchester United, Manchester City and Aston Villa were the only three opponents to these rules. Chelsea abstained. So it's gone through on the, you got to a two-thirds of the clubs in favour. So that's where we are. It's not going to affect anything till 25-26. And in my view, it's not even going to impact clubs in terms of their reluctance to spend. There's been some interesting reactions. Manchester United have said, we're worried that it might affect our competitiveness in Europe. Get into the Champions League first, Manchester United, before you start saying that, is my response to that. So why have they responded in the way they have? In my view, Ineos have now realised that the task of turning around Manchester United is going to be very, very expensive. So the last thing that they want is a wage cap, which could potentially constrain them. What the other opposite opponents have been the Professional Footballers Association, and they said, hold on, wage cap, we've got an agreement with the Premier League. Why is this being put through without any consultation?
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Three questions, Kieran. First of all, who's going to decide this arbitrary number, whether it's 4 times 103 million, 5 times 6 times? Secondly, what does anchoring mean in this context? And thirdly, what sort of sanction would there be in future for clubs that were to breach this? Are we talking about including a luxury tax on this, whereby clubs could spend much more money but pay a fine that's then spread amongst the rest of the Premier League? Or will there be points deductions if you spend more than your 550 million quid?
Well, I think if we go through those questions in turn, who decides? There's going to be a further meeting of Premier League chief executives in around about a month's time. And that's when they're going to determine the multiplier. Is it going to be 4.5? Is it going to be 5? Is it going to be 6 times? Now, I've spoken to some competition lawyers today, secret competition lawyers, of course, and they say, well, this is absolutely fantastic news because the Range Rover needs a service and we've not booked yet next year's skiing holiday. I've been told that there is at least one club who is already considering this as being a restraint of trade. It's anti-competitive in terms of their activities. And without wanting to go down the Nottingham Forest tweet, they are considering all options. So there's that. I could see the PFA equally potentially having an objection and taking it there. There doesn't appear to have been a lot of research. You know, I spoke to some academics. I spoke to some other people who are not directly linked to the Premier League clubs, but who do have an interest in football, who are involved in the world of finance. And they say, well, we've got no idea where these numbers have come from. They just appear to be randomly picked. So is this, again, part of the aims of the Premier League to send out the message, look, we're trying to put our house in order. We're trying to get a wage gap. We don't need a regulator. Is it also part of the changing landscape of Premier League football, where 5 or 6 years ago, you knew you had 6 clubs who acted together and you had 14 clubs who acted together. And what we've seen since then are shifting sands. You know, new groups, new factions are being formed all of the time. Is this an attempt by some of the smaller clubs to, you know, have a bit of a slap in the face to those clubs who they feel have perhaps bullied their way into getting a bigger slice of the action through threats of the Super League historically? So that's that. As far as the anchor is concerned, could there be, and again, I'm sort of, you know, trying to think out the box here, is this a way for some of the smaller clubs to try to go back to their friends in the Premier League and say, let's renegotiate again the distribution of money within the Premier League so that the club finishing bottom gets more than 103? If that goes up from 103 to 120, Then 5 times 120 becomes 600 million. And could it be worth the while of the bigger clubs to say, okay, perhaps you've got a point? So, you know, there are so many layers of intrigue and scandal and politics taking place here. It's, you know, there's a book to be written, probably fictional, but there's a lot to deal with.
I mean, Kieran, that wouldn't be a good look if after all the Premier League's delays on distributing money to the rest of football, the next thing they do is distribute more money to themselves via the bottom team. That's not a good look, is it? I mean, that's ballsy even by Premier League standards. The one club that you talked about restraint of trade, considering its options, that would presumably be one of the wealthier clubs then, I guess, would it?
Possibly.
It would make no sense, for example, for Palace or West, maybe West, you couldn't put anything past West Ham, would you? And what about the luxury tax? I mean, is this something that's built in to this idea right from the start, or are we not talking about that level of detail yet?
I don't think we've got as far as that yet. I mean, I think in terms of those clubs who potentially could launch an objection to this, there were only 3 clubs that voted against the proposal. It's not beyond the wit of wisdom and man to say possibly one of those. So yeah, they are tend to be some of the bigger clubs. Sanctions, I don't think they've got that far down the road. There does seem to be an acceleration of interest in this, but it seems to have arrived half-baked to a certain extent.
Interesting then that Newcastle did vote for it, because I think a lot of people, anti-Newcastle fans, would have been delighted to have that stick to beat them with. And presumably Sheffield United voted the way Newcastle voted as well. We've had that discussion before. But you'd imagine if, you know, Newcastle would be one of those clubs potentially could spend what they want, would be firmly against it. So I think Newcastle fans would be encouraged to hear that they voted for it.
Yes, but based on my calculations, Newcastle could spend if this was the only rule in town, they could spend somewhere between 250 and 350 million pounds, depending on the size of the multiplier. But you also have to remember we've got the other rules in existence, and we've got UEFA rules for those clubs that qualify for Europe, which, again, change everything again.
Well, so let me just clarify this, Kieran, because I was, they were talking about this from Sky last night and this morning, and I believe on TalkSport, I wouldn't know. But so the one thing I didn't take from, so I assumed, and I think a lot of football fans assumed as well, that from season 26-27 or 27-28, FFP goes and spending cap comes in, but they will still run parallel.
That's right. So you'll have your squad cost control rules, which is the first thing that you implement. And then after that, you apply the anchoring rule to see whether that you can cut costs at a stage further. And I think anchoring will impact at most upon one or two clubs, probably zero, based on the numbers that we have at present. But if you start to look at some of the desires of some of the bigger clubs to improve their and expand their commercial activities, yeah, opening more mega stores overseas, that would count as commercial. That would be excluded from anchoring. And you know, with no disrespect to any of our clubs, you know, Manchester United can stick a badge on anything and people are going to buy it. Who's going to buy a Lewis Dunk lampshade holder or a Joel Ward set of pyjamas? You know, there isn't a market for it. Whereas, therefore, your commercial ceiling is much, much lower for the smaller clubs.
One thing I can guarantee, Kieran, almost 100%, is that Joel Ward wears pyjamas when he goes to bed. And I'm sorry for being a bearer of small brain, Kieran, but I just wanted to clarify that the fact that both FFP and this will continue in the future. And by the way, Ange Postecoglou's comments last week about Tottenham's global fan base being as important as the one in N17 didn't go down too well, did it, with the fans in N17? Now, our next question, Kieran, our next news story, I beg your pardon. Luckily, if there's one thing we've ascertained over 500 episodes, Kieran, it's that we're not cynical. I think that's the last thing. I think even Swiss Ramble, when he accused us of basically being shit for the first 100 episodes, which is what he did in a very polite way, I think even he would have said that you weren't very good, but at least you weren't cynical. So the fact that the Premier League have bunged the National League a vast amount of money in the past couple of weeks, I think has no bearing whatsoever on this next news story. And I think that, Kieran, because like you, I'm not cynical.
You're absolutely right to be not cynical. The National League and the Premier League are in talks about the creation of a new cup competition. This is the Premier League whose head, Richard Masters, was saying only 4 or 5 days ago, there are too many fixtures. So there's going to be a new cup competition between the National League and Premier League under 21 sides. And you might be saying, well, hold on, there's already a competition between Premier League under 21 sides and clubs from the EFL who put out, you know, senior teams. I think it's called the Bristol Street Motors Trophy. It used to be known as the EFL Trophy. Why is this? And certainly from my understanding, that particular competition is subsidised by the Premier League because they want their under-21s to have more competitive football. Surely if they wanted the National League involved as well, it would have made more sense to have a competition involving the EFL, the National League and the Premier League under-21s. So for the second time in just over a week, the National League has aligned itself to the Premier League because the National League board, to the surprise of National League clubs, remember, said, oh, no, we don't want replays. And people go, well, why do you not want first and second round replays? Well, we now know because it wants those particular weeks to be available for their clubs to play against Premier League under 21 clubs, for which presumably they're going to receive some form of financial compensation because the crowds won't be big enough to justify hosting those matches themselves. When you talk to people associated with with clubs at National League level. Remember, we've had players from the National League. They say, yeah, we're on 1 year contracts. Many of us are on 10-month contracts as well. It's a very precarious, and you're now asking us to put our bodies under additional stress and strain in what is a short career, in what is not a well-paid job, in terms of if you spread your football earnings in the National League over the lifetime of the individuals concerned, in order to assist the Premier League to develop its own players.
Yeah. I think it's fair to point out, Kieran, as we're not cynical, that there could be a range of other reasons why the National League have said they didn't want replays in the FA Cup. Not necessarily connected to the fact that they've been offered more money by the Premier League for this competition. Could be many, many other reasons. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Also, we know a director of a National League club who drinks in the Porter's arm. So either we're going to get a big hug when he says, thank God you've highlighted that, or we're going to get our ear chewed off for suggesting that the National League are in cahoots with the Premier League. We're suggesting no such thing. We really aren't. Even Simon Jordan wouldn't suggest something. He would, but then he'd blame somebody else like he always does. Our next story, Kieran, takes us to Spain and one of our old friends, Javier Tebas. He's not popular at the best of times, Kieran. He's not making himself popular with this story, is he?
Well, unpopular with whom, precisely?
Fans.
I think Spanish fans have a more sanguine attitude to the love and the importance of home fixtures than we perhaps do here in England. But what Tebas has said, and I think this could be a stalking horse, is said that official La Liga matches could be played in the USA from the 25-26 season. La Liga has a TV deal which is worth around about 50% of that of the Premier League. And Tebas is forever going on about the struggles that clubs have in trying to compete with the Premier League. You've only got to look at Barcelona, who spent, £140 million on Coutinho, £120 million on Dembele, £110 million on Griezmann. We've seen Real Madrid sign the odd player for decent fees as well to know just how impoverished they are. So why are they doing this? It's because there is no growth in the La Liga TV monies. So how can we increase revenues? Well, you can get more money by taking matches to the States. You know, in America, there is a different culture with regards to what people are prepared to pay in order to attend a game of football. I know from going to the Premier League Summer Series last year to see what was it, glorified friendlies, and I paid $110-120 for a ticket, and that wasn't for particularly good tickets. So there's the opportunity for clubs to generate more money from match day. There's opportunities to increase the size of the fan base there, to sell more merchandise and so on. Now, Richard Masters, to be fair to him, of the Premier League, has been asked, is it your intention to repeat that? And he said no, but he can't give an unequivocal no, and he can't. Ultimately, he has to do what his members say. I'm just wondering if we will be in a position in perhaps 4 or 5 years' time where the Premier League clubs are saying, have you seen just how much money La Liga is making? La Liga is now catching us up. We don't want to go to America to host matches. We don't want to go to Saudi Arabia to have matches taking place. But we feel we have no alternative because we want to be competitive with the rest of Europe. So it looks as if the Liga clubs are the first to break for the border in terms of this. Will we see other European leagues follow suit? Never say never in the world of football. That's one thing we've learned over the course of the 500 episodes of this show.
Now, Kieran, you used the word sanguine about Spanish fans there. I'm going to disagree. The two Spanish fans I know who are both Spanish and fans of football, Spanish fans, I wouldn't use the word sanguine to describe them. Certainly not halfway through a Clásico. And I think I think to forget the fans in this situation would be a mistake on behalf of any European league who wanted to play their games outside their countries. Because my brother-in-law, for example, was Americans, big fan of the Denver Broncos NFL team. I know many American NFL fans who don't give a flying monkeys about how the NFL broadens its appeal across the rest of the world. They do give a flying monkeys that they're missing one home game a season because it's being played in Germany or London. And we all know that if La Liga want to make money out of playing games in America, it's only Barcelona and Real Madrid and Atletico and possibly Seville that are going to make money over there. So you trying to tell in Barcelona and Real Madrid fans that season ticket list they've been on for 35 years to get their tickets at the Nou Camp, they're missing three games. I can't see that happening without. So you try telling Bayern Munich fans that two of their games a season are going. Try telling Liverpool fans that two of their games a season are going. But I think that would be such a seismic change in football that I just can't see it. I can't see Spanish fans allowing it to happen. I really can't. I mean, I know there's the odd one-off Spanish FA Cup final or Super Cup or whatever. That's a different matter. But for an actual league game, I mean, as Palace and Brighton fans, it's not bothering us, is it? Because let's face it, Palace Brighton ain't going to be played in San Diego anytime in the future. But the fans of those big clubs, who, as we saw, Super League, and I know you will argue that some of the continental football fans weren't as angry about it as Premier League fans were. But when push comes to shove, I just think that's a step too far, Kieran. I really do think. I can't see them going through with it. Well, I hope they wouldn't. But
I hope you're right. I think Spain will be the first to go, and I don't want to see it. I agree with you that German fans are probably the most militant in Europe, followed by English fans. What we also have, I think, is we've got a print media and a TV media where the pundits and the writers are, to a certain extent, on the side of the fans. And they remember, it was Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher who really rallied the troops during Super League, which caused those demonstrations, which caused the whole idea to collapse so quickly. There wasn't the same reaction in Spain. There wasn't the same reaction in Italy. It didn't affect Germany because German clubs had simply originally said no. My concern is that if you take the objectives of the owners, and this is not an anti-American rant, but if you take the objectives of the American owners of English football clubs, their objective is to maximise revenue. They are not interested in football. They are interested in bottom line. They're interested in developing top line. They're interested in monetization of the game. And we saw with both Project Big Picture and Super League, what they want to do is to make more money. And this is one way of doing it. I think there are other ways of doing it, which can actually satisfy everybody. Although people will probably think I'm slightly mad when I come out with these ideas.
Yeah. Well, I want you to promise, Kieran, if they try that in the Premier League, me and you are going back to the streets like the old days in the 80s when we eventually got Thatcher out of power. It's going to be full-on scarf, hoodie, bag of bricks, rummaging in a skip for bits of wood. This is not going to happen, Kieran. Lincoln City are a club who's always been on your the opposite of the naughty. I never did find out what the opposite of a naughty step is. But they've had some good news regarding investment this week from, ironically, a major American player.
Yes, I think Lincoln City are a perfect example of a progressive club that engages really well with the local community, with the fan base. Clive Nates, who is the owner, he's also said, I can only take the club so far. You know, and what we see from Lincoln is, you know, half a million pounds coming into the club on a regular basis. But they've just had a boost. One-eighth of the club has been sold now to an MLB chief, Ron Fowler, who owns the San Diego Padres, where the Brighton Crystal Palace match is not going to take place according to you. I don't know whether that was a Freudian slip or you've just been pre-reading the script for today's show.
No, Kieran, it's obviously it's pre-reading. I do have a cursory glance. I'm quite professional. I do have a cursory glance before we go on air.
So why has Ron Fowler decided to become a minority investor in Lincoln City Football Club? Well, the chances are he's seen the progress that's been made there. If I was advising anybody to buy into an English football club, I would be looking at a club probably in League One. We've seen what's happened at Ipswich Town. You know, they were taken over, 12, 18 months ago by American investors who've now sold out a share for, valuing the club at 100 million. They bought it when it was probably worth 20 to 30. So they'll be seeing those deals go through and they'll be saying, well, Lincoln have had a pretty decent season, going for the playoffs as far as League One is concerned, get up to the Championship. Luton did it. And if you get into the Championship, start of August, you are 46 games away from the Premier League, or perhaps 49 if you get into the playoffs. So you can see the attraction of a club such as Lincoln. It's got decent, solid support. It owns, it owns its infrastructure assets. It's got a management team in Clive and Liam who are super professional. They both row in the same direction. I think it's really important that you've got a chief executive who has a good relationship with the owner and therefore knows how to deliver the objectives of the owner. Fantastic relationship with the fan base. I can see why I'd be attracted as an American investor.
So I think the other bonus for Ron Fowler as well is because I imagine back in his days when he was owning San Diego Padres, he'd be sitting at meetings with other high-flying Americans, all of whom have got names like Loudon J. Barkley III and Hiram J. Berry Finn, whatever. And then they've introduced Ron Fowler and they've all gone, what? Ron Fowler? Ron Fowler is not a name that belongs at high-class American sport. Somebody said to Ron, do you know where you're going to fit in? England. preferably the north of England. You'll fit right in the north of England. Here he is, Ron Fowler. Oh, there he is. He's American, you say? Now, this next story, Kieran, surprises me a little bit because I assumed in my ignorance that VAR was being used across Europe, that UEFA had kind of insisted on VAR being used. And I discover recently that that's not the case, that several countries have decided not to take it on, partly on a cost basis. And the latest country to reject VAR is Sweden. I hope that in just a few weeks' time, we can say the UK has rejected VAR because it clearly ain't working. Which is nice for us. You know, some people, Kieran, are too mature. When some people are proved to be right 5 years down the line, they go, "Well, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to point out. I'm just laughing in people's faces. Say, I told you, I said you would never work." But Sweden have rejected VAR, Kieran. So
yes, I think there are two issues here. Firstly, as you correctly observed, there is an implementation cost. The Swedish league does not have the same resources as far as the Premier League is concerned, but the cost of installing VAR is the same, whether it's in Sweden or Belgium or England or whatever it's going to be. So therefore, they've done their sums and they've decided that they don't want that level of cost to be incurred. I think they've also probably seen the controversy which has dogged VAR from day one. The implementation has been spotty, I think is the polite way of describing it. Somebody said to me the other day, and this is actually somebody says, I'm going to stop listening to the podcast because I've always defended the referees, not necessarily VAR. But somebody said, I go to football to celebrate a goal, not to celebrate a goal 5 minutes later. And I absolutely understand that. I have my own set of reservations. So they've decided that the costs emotionally and the costs financially outweigh the benefits. What would it take for the Premier League to stop using VAR? It would take 14 votes. That's it. It takes 14 people to raise a hand. Why has that not taken place? It's because, despite all of the reservations about VAR, it's getting more decisions right than it's getting wrong. But is the price of the ones that it gets wrong justifying, and also the delays in being able to, because, you know, every time a goal goes for us, which as a Brighton fan I've not been able to do for a long time, or against you, the first thing that you do is you look at the players and you look up at the screen. And that has become a cultural issue, and it certainly has had an impact upon the enjoyment of the game. Goal line technology, semi-automated offsides, I think, you know, are areas which can be implemented well. There are broader issues, I think, with some of the more subjective decisions.
There are occasions like Fulham on Saturday where you sort of make a mental note as you see the ball rocketing into the top corner. You go, they're definitely four defenders in front of him. This is definitely. And occasionally, there's one of the goals we scored against West Ham. You go, that ball was definitely played backwards. He's definitely offside. So you can celebrate. But for the most part, I thought it was very interesting as well that as Postecoglou said after the game on Sunday, and I didn't think that was a penalty, that first one, I have to say, for which Arsenal broke away to score. He said that he no longer celebrates goals until the game's actually kicked off. But I think we should point out, Kieran, that apart from the odd occasion post-match in the Pawson's Arms for about 5 minutes or so, I, like you, are very much on the side of the referee. One of the reasons I don't like VAR is I think it's made the referee's job far more difficult. We saw, I can't remember what game it was on over the weekend, when the players are surrounding the ref for a penalty decision, and you can see the poor sod backing away going, it's being checked. But this, you know, we've got some of the best referees in the world in this country whose integrity we would never question, which is why we were so cross about the Forest thing. But I think VAR questions their integrity. That's one of my issues with it. And I think life is being made much more difficult for referees than it was before VAR. Now, Kieran, I refer you to our previous discussion about how not cynical we are in the last 500 episodes, which is why I want you to take special care, Kieran, to not be cynical when we talk about a story involving a Saudi state oil company becoming a major FIFA sponsor. I don't think there's anything in that other than the fact that a very kind Saudi state oil company wants to help football across the globe by bunging FIFA a bit of money.
Yes, Saudi Arabia is hosting the World Cup in 2034.
Oh, I've forgotten that. That makes me sound cynical, doesn't it?
It does make you sound cynical. Aramco, which is one of the, if not the wealthiest, natural resources company on the planet, has decided to become a major FIFA sponsor. You know, we've seen the likes of Gazprom from Russia sponsor before. I don't think it's any longer a sponsor of UEFA. And FIFA is always looking for half a dozen senior sponsors at every tournament. It normally is, you know, Coca-Cola, whether it will be able to use Budweiser, given that Saudi Arabia is a dry country. So it's looking to fill a couple of gaps. And one of those gaps has very kindly been filled by the Saudi state oil company, Aramco.
That's nice. We have two more stories to go, Kieran, one of which I'm discussing with more reluctance than the other, I have to say. And we need to get on, because just looking at the time, as I need to wrestle Ed for the big telly, as I want to watch Bayern Munich Real Madrid, and he wants to watch Ronnie O'Sullivan playing the snooker. I can't get BT Sport on my laptop, so he'll win. It doesn't matter. The first story, Kieran, is FIFA again and global TV rights for a new tournament, which I think, again, we've discussed. I mean, we both agree that's what we need. There's not enough tournaments at the moment, Kieran, are there?
That's right. I mean, I think the last time I came to the Pawson's Arms to meet yourself and people who I now count as friends amongst the Palace families, have always been incredibly kind to me. We came to an agreement to say, do you know what? there's not enough football taking place in the summer. You know, people might get distracted and think about watching a game of tennis or cricket or even going for a walk or something like that. What we need is 32 of the wealthiest clubs on the planet to play football for a month in the searing heat of the United States summer in order to bring us further pleasure. And lo and behold, FIFA have done that with the expanded World Club Cup Championship because, yeah, Manchester City winning it last year was to me the highlight of the football calendar. Yeah. So there's the opportunity for that to take place on an expanded basis. And what Apple have done, Apple TV, is that they've signed a £1 billion rights deal for the streaming rights. So that's going to help fund that competition because I think the prize money for that competition is looking pretty good. The winners could be looking at somewhere between 90 to 100 million. So, you know, that's, you know, Chelsea and Manchester City will be the representatives of the Premier League in that tournament. What I think is intriguing is that if this goes to Apple TV and FIFA are genuine about wanting this to be a success, are there also going to be free-to-air options? Because who's going to sign up from this country to watch, you know, Fluminense versus the African Nations Cup winner, you know, from the African sort of equivalent of the Champions League? Who's going to watch the Asian champions of 2023 play against, you know, the MLS champions of 2024? And so on. So, would you pay a subscription fee for that? We're both football enthusiasts. I think I would be fairly indifferent. If it's free to air, you'll give it a go. So it won't be on the A list as far as the government is concerned. You know, which is sort of, you know, the protected sporting events, which is, you know, as we know, the FA Cup final. I think the Grand National. I think Wimbledon's there. The World Cup final and the World Cup opening match, you know, not actually the group game. Sky have always made the decision they don't want to go down that particular route because I think they've always felt that there'd be a backlash because, you know, the home nations having to go and watch them behind a paywall. So Sky have always made a sensible decision with regards to that. So looks like Apple are in it. Yeah, Apple have signed a $2.5 billion 10-year deal with MLS for the rights there. The viewing figures are good. Now that's because a certain Argentinian superstar is playing in MLS. Whether that can be maintained, and remember, he's on a share of those revenues as well, whether that can be maintained, whether they can be this can be turned into success, we wait events.
You are very popular in Porson's Arms, Kieran, and I think my friends would count you as a friend now. Everyone's always very pleased to see you. One of the reasons being that when it comes to buying a round of drinks, you know, pint of Guinness, pint of cider, pint of lager, double Jameson's. Kieran, what would you like? I'll have a pint of water, please. That's always. And in fact, sometimes it's not even I'll have a pint of water. It's I've got a bottle of water of my own, which I've yet to tell Graham and Bev who run the place that you're bringing your own water in because you'd be. There are very few things that get you barred from the Porson's Arms, but bringing in your own water is... they'd rather you set up a still in the back bar and brewed your own gin than bringing in your own water. This last news story, Kieran, I give it the title news story. I'll give it the cognomen news story. I'm reading it out because it says it here. It says here, the most important question of the summer, how much will it cost to complete the Euro 24 official sticker album, and what's going on with Tops and Panini? I'll be perfectly honest, Kieran, I'm not that interested because I'm a grown man. But clearly, to producer guy, this is an important question, so crack on.
I think you'll find that there are quite many grown men who, on behalf of their children and grandchildren, even if they don't have children or grandchildren, are still deciding to collect the stickers because it's a major tournament. And
Kieran,
if we look at
Kieran, can I stop you there? That argument is akin to me saying, I'm buying these two bottles of wine from the co-op to lay them down as an investment for my grandchildren. It's not. It's some kind of postmodern ironics purchase of these Panini stickers going on here, is it? In order to, so some stage in about 100 years' time on the Antiques Roadshow, this beautiful young teenage girl says, well, I can't part with them because they were handed down to me by my grandfather, Kieran, who spent his life and his money. And the person will go, well, Kieran Maguire of the Price of Football podcast? And they'll go, yeah, who was that other bloke? So with no idea. And then the antiques expert will say, it's worth nothing. And then your granddaughter will go, I've got a signed photograph of Kieran Maguire. And the antiques expert will say, everyone's got a signed photograph of Kieran Maguire. And then she'll say, I've got one that's not signed. And he'll say, now we're talking. That'll be the end of that. That'll be the last story in the antique. Just after the bloke who does the medals will be an unsigned photograph of Kieran Maguire that goes for £1 million.
Harsh but fair. So if we take a look at the second question first, which I think is more intriguing, there are two organisations who have contracts with the world of football, one of which is called TOPS, and TOPS now has the official contract with UEFA for this tournament. But you know, we all remember, you know, Panini. It's a bit like we always thought that German football kits forever and a day would be manufactured by Adidas, and things change, yeah, as we've recently seen.
Yeah.
But Panini have fought back because Panini have contracts with certain English players. So if you take a look at the English team in TOPS, you're going, I've not heard of any of these players. Are these sort of the snide names you used to get on Sensible Soccer when you're playing England? You know, Jeff Burst and Bobby Chilton and so on.
Finally, Jen and Bronson gets into the England team.
That's right. So it's all a bit bizarre. So we've got two sets of stickers, one of which is effectively the official England pack, and then you've got the official UEFA tournament. And I think it's £11.99 to buy the album, and it's one full pound now to buy a set of stickers, of which Goodness. You get six stickers. So I spoke to my colleague at university, a gentleman called Jason Law. Jason's a big Sunderland fan. He's also he's a genius when it comes. Yeah, I can do bog standard spreadsheet stuff. And you remember with his conversation with Swiss Ramble, he says, yeah, we work with colleagues who can do amazing things. Well, my friend Jason put this into his probability machine. And his probability machine is very, very clever. And you're going to need, if you're going to do no swaps, you're going to need 860 packs. So that's £860 plus £11.99 to buy the album in order to complete your sticker. Now, if you use swaps, or if you go to the TOPS website where you can buy particular players, it certainly reduces the number. So if for example, if you bought 100 stickers and you knew exactly who you were buying, there's no fun in doing that. You know, part of the joys of sticker collecting is that excitement when you open the pack and you go, oh yeah. Polish left back. I've got three of them already. But if you bought 100 stickers direct, it would only cost you £239 plus the cost of your 100 direct stickers. So it depends which route you want to go down. And what you will see, if you go on Facebook and similar sites, there's lots of people who are setting up sticker swap books. And then you get the people saying, I'd love to do this, but you know, my kids can't afford the manuals, and can you give them to me? And then you've got this, and some of them are scamming them, some are not, and it all starts to get, again, there's a whole drama to be written about the world of sticker collecting over the course of a summer.
To my surprise, Kieran, I did perk up and show some interest halfway through that. And one question I do have for you is, how much does a probability machine cost?
Boy, you've got to have a degree in abstract maths and put it in. And you also have to be familiar with a programming language called Python. And you run a series of simulations on this, and it works out the numbers for you. But it's a probability machine. It's tough. I wish I'd had a probability machine in my teenage years. It would have saved me a lot of wasted evenings.
I reckon we must be able to find a pub probability machine somewhere who can there'll be a bloke or there'll be a bloke or an older lady somewhere just giving them a load of random facts and say, right, given that, what's the probability of Palace winning the Champions League? And go, oh, crikey, not 12%. And there you go. That saves you 4 years of doing an abstract. What's abstract maths? Abstract maths. What's abstract maths?
It's maths which involves no numbers. Just symbols.
Get out of here. What do you mean maths that involves no numbers?
You do a degree in maths. You won't see a number for 2 years. Or why is it?
Well, you might see a. What happens if you do a whole degree in abstract maths and you just get a 2-2? That'd be heartbreaking. or a square tetrahedron. How can you have maths with no numbers?
That's why it's advanced.
I get the advanced. Oh, man, you're working on levels that I can't begin to understand. Thank you. I'm going to see. I'll have to ask Ed now. That's my answer to everything these days. Ed, I'm a bit off. You say, hang on a second, you've only just asked me what pegging is and now you're asking me what abstract maths is. See, that's how you top and tailor podcast, Josh Widdicombe. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, as well, that'd be very kind of you. We'll get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. Don't forget our end of season quiz is coming up in just a few weeks' time. You can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And if you'd like to buy our book or one of our other books or get yourself a Price of Football t-shirt or degree in abstract maths, you can do that at the same website, priceoffootball.com. Now, don't forget, as we've been mentioning, from next week, our questions pod will arrive on Tuesday rather than Monday. So don't panic if we're not there on Monday morning. You just have to do your gym session or your 15-mile walk of the dog on the beach without us, or put it off to Tuesday. But I promise you, we'll be with you first thing on Tuesday every week from now on. But we'll be back on Tuesday. No, we're back on. Oh, it's. Oh, yeah. No, we're back on Tuesday. Oh, it's complicated, isn't it?
We might sneak in an interview between then and now. Who knows?
We are going to sneak in an interview, Kieran, with possibly the secret footballer. We don't know. But this is why the fact I couldn't get the day right was why I failed my interview at Cambridge for my abstract maths degree. But we'll be back on Tuesday with our questions pod. In the meantime, I will hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, once again, a huge thanks from both Kevin and myself for all of the kind words that you've sent with regards to episode 500. And we were genuinely knocked out that Swiss Ramble, you know, agreed to come on the show. He's a man whose time is very precious, and we're honoured to have him there. There's a variety of ways you can support the show. If you want an ad-free version, you can go to Patreon and join our Patreon channels. And there's been a lot of Patreon chat on our Discord channel today due to various football matters taking place. There's another way that you can support the show, and that's to give us a review. It helps us with the charts. It helps us with the algorithms. If people are thinking about subscribing, they tend to look at the reviews. It doesn't matter what you say. So you could even say, given that it is show number 501, that you would rather have it presented by Brian Lara and Nick Kamen. And now I've got heard it through the vape grapevine going through my head.
Oh, that's one of your best. That would be a cracker, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Oh, that would be a cracker. All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.